JEA's board calls for a reset, while others say it's time for a grand jury. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this morning, why calls are growing for a grand jury investigation into JEA and other controversies at Jacksonville City Hall. What do you think? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, it's our month's book club pick, plus how local nonprofit Daniel is helping kids in need this holiday season. That's all ahead. But first this morning, the board chair of JEA is calling for a reset as controversy grows around the publicly owned utility. JEA board chair April Green is asking the Jacksonville City Council for a restart button on some pieces of the board's decision to put the utility up for sale. The city council is voting today on a resolution to kill sales talks. Here's Green.
I personally, especially after hearing what I've heard today, am committed to meet with each and every council member to answer every question you may wonder about from a board perspective.
Now, at the same time, the recent controversy around JEA's push to privatize, along with other issues, have a coalition of groups calling for a grand jury investigation into what they say is a culture of corruption at Jacksonville City Hall. Here with more, we welcome Pastor R.L. Gundy of Mount Sinai Missionary Baptist Church and local columnist and concerned citizen Juan Gray. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. What's your reaction to calls from some in this community for a grand jury investigation into controversy at JEA? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. We'll get to all of your tweets. They've already been coming in a few moments. Pastor Gundy, let's begin with you. You sent a formal request to State Attorney Melissa Nelson. You and a coalition of groups, the Northside Coalition of Jacks, local labor unions, the Jacksonville Leadership Coalition, the Baptist Ministers Conference, and more, asking for a grand jury investigation into controversy around JEA, also micro grants, and an investigation into how those were administered through the Kids Hope Alliance and other matters. Why are you requesting this investigation?
Well, there comes a point in time when it comes to communities questioning all the things that are going on down at City Hall. The only way you get to the bottom line is you stop the speculations, you have a grand jury investigation, you put all the facts that you have before the grand jury investigation, you let the grand jury determine whether it is a white collar crime or whatever kind of crime, a RICO acts or whatever the case may be, and then say to the state attorney, this is what you should do. The question that we have now with the state, we didn't just send it to the state attorney, we also sent it to the federal U.S. attorney in Tampa. So this is where we are. I'm tired of the speculation because there are too many things going on. JEA, then you have Kids Hope Alliance, other things. So we compiled all the information that we had, we put it together, and we sent it in requesting that grand jury investigation after we were meeting for months.
There's been no response yet from State Attorney Nelson's office. We also contacted them. They don't have a statement at this time for us here at WJCT. In your letter, though, you're citing ethics violations, abuse of power, and extortion. Let's go through what we know about this recent controversy and whether it would even rise to the level of impaneling a grand jury. Juan Gray, if you could weigh in, there are two big recent issues that have riled this community, the JEA matter and also allegations of procurement fraud at the Kids Hope Alliance. The former head of that agency, Joe Peppers, even though he's still technically employed there, alleges that Mayor Curry's chief of staff, Brian Hughes, pressured him to hand out micro grants to certain faith groups in this community without going through the proper procurement process. So I just wanted to outline the background there. But is there enough evidence to impanel a grand jury? One.
The real issue is a prosecutorial discretion. We, as citizens, cannot trust the efficiency of the state attorney's office, the inspector general, or the ethics office to include the political interference, which was outlined perfectly by Brother Peppers. I think Brother Peppers need to be commended for his boldness and integrity. And it took some degree of integrity to write an email entitled Undue Influence regarding many grants and stopping influence. It was a clear case of him being leaned on by Sam Musa and Brian Hughes. But I think the most telling of those issues is that one of the persons to whom received this email is also a member of the state attorney's office who had this information last year. For 1 year, this information has been in the state attorney's office. But as soon as Peppers wrote this email and it was received by City Hall, someone in City Hall decided that we would get the inspector general within City Hall to conduct an investigation. We probably need to ask the question, when was the last time the inspector general's office and the ethics office ever filed anything that showed any evidence of wrongdoing of anyone within City Hall?
So in that sense, you're saying you don't trust that the inspector general could conduct a truly independent investigation.
What I'm saying is that the city council, inspector general, and the ethics office are controlled by this mayor. This mayor has a propensity for killing democracy and poisoning the bipartisanship. When he arrived in this city and demanded that all members of boards, commissions, and agencies deliver a resignation to him, and Jake Godbo said it's best, he handpicked cronies and infiltrated and poisoned and killed democracy of agencies which run this city, starting with JEA, JAA, the Port Authority, and that's why we have the state affairs we have now currently at the Jacksonville Electric Authority.
We'll go to your calls in a moment. We're trying to reboot our phones actually right now, so we ask for your patience. The number to join us is 549-2937. Okay, Pastor Gundy, I'm quoting from your letter to State Attorney Nelson. We want to put this cloud of corruption, mistrust, cronyism, nepotism, and white-collar crime behind us so that our community can move forward. The only way to resolve this is to conduct a grand jury investigation from your office, FDLE, and the U.S. Justice Department. It's my understanding you've also tried to contact the U.S. attorney and ask them to investigate JEA issues?
Let me just make that plain. We didn't just contact them. We have been sharing with the U.S. attorney's office what's been going on in Duval County for the last year. I make no bones about that. It is imperative that we find some way to get someone to take a look at all the things that is taking place inside that city government to determine what's really going on. And the only way we're going to do that is to have a separate investigation, independent of the IG office, independent of the ethics office, and then we can really know what's going on in our community so we can move forward. The government in Jacksonville has become so big, it has become corrupt within itself. And so we've got to figure out how to fix this. That mayor can't handle all these things that are actually going on in this community. He has no way to really control it, even though they're trying to control everything we do, to include the issue about the school board, you know, elected of a school board superintendent. That's crazy.
Okay. There's been the whole issue of the sales tax referendum for schools and the appointed versus elected school board as well, although that has... I don't know that there's evidence there that would lead to a criminal investigation.
We didn't ask them to look into the criminal investigation as it relates to that, but we did ask them to look into the criminal investigation as it relates to what's going on in City Hall concerning Jacksonville Electric Authority.
Okay. And our phone system is down across our whole building, which is very unfortunate this morning, but we have lots of tweets and Facebook comments and emails that we can get to now as we speak with Pastor R.L. Gundy and Juan Gray about their coalition's group calling for a grand jury investigation into controversies at City Hall and JEA. Here's a tweet from Julie. JEA's plea for a restart in today's newspaper sounds an awful lot like, We're going to stop being dishonest, so you can trust us now. Yeah, right. The Jacksonville City Council needs to vote yes on tonight's emergency resolution and then vote no confidence in the JEA board. Council member Brenda Priestley Jackson has put forth a resolution asking her members to vote to kill any further sales negotiations at JEA. Juan Gray, we don't know how the council will vote. There will be protesters at City Hall later today urging them to approve this resolution. What are your thoughts about the city council's part to play in all of this?
Our city council in the past has proven themselves to be a puppet regime for this mayor. We do not have two separate branches of government with the executive and the legislature. What we have is a combination of an executive branch where the mayor tells the executive branch what to do and how to do it, and then must be checked in with the mayor. In all the time that I've studied government, I never remember anything showing that you must ask Mother may I for the executive branch to do anything. So I don't have too much confidence in whatever the mayor wants done. The city council seemed to bless it and sprinkle it with holy water.
Do you think
Jackson
that
and Dennis should be commended for being voices of reason to speak for citizens who want to have a legislative branch which is independent of the mayor?
Let me ask you, in recent weeks, some voices on the city council have put some daylight between themselves and Mayor Curry on this issue. Do you think that the city council is starting to show independence on this matter?
As he said, that's a glimmer of hope. And when you start looking at Mr. Carlucci and start looking at Brenda Priestley Jackson, and Garrett has been tooting that home for quite some time. Unfortunately, when you have a government that is doing what it is doing and it won't follow the principles of democracy, then it is up to the people to push the button to move. Now, in all reality, what's happening tonight is to go in and support Brenda Priestley's emergency to say to the city council, you need to do this. If they don't want to listen, then the protest begins, don't just begin tonight. It continues tomorrow as we will assemble at 2 o'clock. And then we will start a march to City Hall. That doesn't let them off. We want to let them know that we've even asked people not to go to Publix on Monday. We've asked them not to go to Winn-Dixie on Tuesday. We've asked them not to go to Starbucks on Wednesday, because we've got to start putting some economic issues in the middle of this, since they won't listen to the people, because it is the people's utilities. It is the people's voice that must be heard. They don't want to listen to us. And we're not going to allow the Gator Bowl or the Tax Layer Bowl to go by this time without the people that's come to this community knowing what's really going on in Jacksonville. We're not playing with them anymore.
Okay, here is a comment on our Facebook page. It's from Jim Fuller, the former clerk of the Circuit and County Court for Duval County.
Right.
He writes, if JEA is doing so badly, why do 16 companies want to buy the utility? That type of disconnect, I think, is why JEA's leadership has had a hard time making this case to the public.
Well, Jim has always supported the system and always reported where they were going. This is not a Republican issue. This is not a Democratic issue. This is a people issue. The question is, they already have the money that they need in JEA. We don't really need to sell it. They've told them that they don't need to sell it. And why then are you having a secret meeting in Atlanta, as far as we're concerned, and not opening that up to the public as well? But you're talking about 16 people that want to buy a facility. Why do we have to sell what belongs to the people? Then there's the issue, if you don't have a public utility issue, will FEMA come back in? So as a United Nations chaplaincy for Northeast Regional Area, I know we have been told that if they sell that facility, we have a mass hurricane here, FEMA is not going to come in to support this the way they normally would. That doesn't make any common sense. It doesn't take care of the people.
Here's an email from Andy. The workshops at City Hall on this need to be held right now, not in January or February. He's talking about upcoming fact-finding workshops on JEA. I would like to attend these meetings. JEA needs to stay as it is. We need to use a city-owned utility to do more for the environment and for our economy. These utilities spending so much ratepayer money on self-promotion is outrageous. Now, let me ask you about that one. The board chair, April Green, asking the city council for a restart says, look, we're not going to do this bonus scheme, this performance payout scheme to our employees that came under fire. We're no longer going to send flyers to ratepayers using taxpayer funds to tout the benefits of a sale. Are these backpedaling moves enough, do you think, to satisfy the public and the local officials? By the way, a member of the JEA board just submitted his resignation this morning. We're getting a news release about that as I speak. Andy Allen was appointed only in June of this year and has resigned from the JEA board. So just trying to keep up with fast-breaking events here.
The answer to your question is absolutely no. A restart, as I stated before, all boards and agencies and commissions in this town are suspect because the mayor handpicked persons who are on the board now. What real qualifications do most of them have to occupy and provide leadership to our agencies? We have reached a point in America where we are not led by the best and the brightest. We're led by the cronies, handpicks, and those who go along with anything and are brain dead and do what they're told like robots. I think we need to provide a special shout out to those newly elected officials, DeFore and Carlucci, who just showed up on the city council, who seem to provide a new voice of reason, who come in with new blood to take a look. Why do citizens cut out in activities concerning, why citizens cut out activities concerning the sale of a agency that belonged to the citizens? To citizens. What happened to John Q. Public being a part? We're not bright enough to be a part. Are you trying to do something that you don't want us to know is done until after the fact? Restart? How about start over?
Lots of tweets. Meanwhile, here is a tweet from John. If employees lie or make mistakes on their time card, they get fired because that is stealing money from the taxpayers. This pub scheme, I think he's talking about the bonus scheme that JEA has now scrapped. It was a way to create money at the taxpayers' expense. Stealing from the same people, just a lot more money involved. We need accountability, no restart. Here is a tweet from Brenda. Yes, we need transparency ASAP. Can the media do a Panama Papers style? Connect the dots, follow the money. Can we talk about microgrids and the future of the energy business? If I had my way, JEA would have switched to renewable energy 15 years ago. Now, Brenda, I appreciate those sentiments. That said, JEA is dealing with the same challenges in switching to renewables as all the other utilities are around the world and the country. Certainly, though, I think it's fair to say they could have pushed more aggressively into renewables a lot sooner than they are now doing. And the argument for keeping the utility public is the public, at least theoretically, has a little bit more oversight into how a utility is handling the shift to renewable energy than they would with a private company. So that's another matter that has come up in this discussion. Pastor Gundy.
I think overall, the community has an opportunity now, and we're willing from our standpoint as the African American Ministers in Action, as a state director for Florida, if they want to join in with us and if we have to submit a class action lawsuit against the city as it relates to JEA, then we're willing to put that in place. We are not for the sale of this facility. They have the money to take care of the community. And at best, you know, it's back to what Dr. Gray was saying about this prosecutorial discretion. The state attorney has the authority to convene a grand jury. Citizens has the authority to request a grand jury investigation. And since we have submitted a letter requesting a grand jury investigation, and we didn't only talk about it, but it was talked about by others, then let's do that. Let's get to the bottom of this.
Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Tom. Don't forget Sam Moose's solicitation of a consulting contract from the school board where he said that would result in passage of their referendum. That sounds suspiciously like a bribe. There is also Moose's no-bid consulting contract with the city to be looked into. Okay, Juan Gray, if you could, because for many years now, you've been writing and speaking out about the perception that justice is not blind in Jacksonville and that investigations are done selectively. So I know you have a lot to say about that.
I've talked to attorneys about this situation concerning Sam Houston. I identified the word extortion.
That's right.
Clear case of extortion. I wrote an article that was published in the Florida Star and also the Folio Weekly, and it was entitled "The Extortion Question Concerning City Hall and Our School Board." To have Sam Moussa and Tim Baker to form an organization to go to two school board members and proposition them both to hire them to push the issue that the school board was trying to get $1.9 million to improve the infrastructure of our schools, and they can ensure that that happened. However, it would not be the school board's timeline. It'd have to be later. If that's not extortion, I don't know clearly what is. Now, this is an clear example of where is the state attorney in this matter. And the issue go back to connecting the dots between the relationship between the mayor, the chief of staff, and the state attorney.
Okay. State Attorney Melissa Nelson used the campaign consulting services of Tim Baker in her successful run for state attorney. Yeah, he used to be affiliated in a campaign consulting company with Mayor Curry's chief of staff, Brian Hughes. And so that said, State Attorney Nelson has sworn to uphold the law, investigate allegations of wrongdoing. And so where do you plan to take this approach with her office from here, your coalition?
Well, you know, compared to what we had, she's a whole lot better than what we used to have. No doubt about that.
If they're saying anything.
And with what's coming up in 2020, she has to step up and say to the community that I'm going to do the right thing as a state attorney, as I promised you when I got into this office. I don't believe that Brian Hughes or Baker can tie her hands up, nor the mayor. As a matter of fact, we know for a fact that she has the mayor has turned on her along with Brian Hughes because she did not go after Broche and she did not go after Garrett Dennis.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that the mayor and Brian Hughes got mad at the state attorney because she did not prosecute Broche and Garrett Dennis.
For what?
Reference to ethics,
sunshine law
violations. But, do you have proof of this?
Well, someone from the state attorney's office actually talked to me about it. I cannot reveal that source. However, I would tell you that on top of that, Brian Hughes has gotten caught up in the ethics issues. And so I don't see them pressuring him as relation to what he did up there in reference to sunshine law myself. So It's a very tough situation, but I believe that justice is blind with her. I believe that. But she's not talking. The feds are not talking. And so when they're not talking to me, since I used to work for some of them, that means that something is going on. They just can't reveal it to the public. But we need to bring it to light through the grand jury investigation.
Well, we thank you both for joining us. We'll continue to follow this story where it leads. Pastor R.L. Gundy, Mount Sinai Missionary Baptist Church, local activist and writer Dr. Juan Gray. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, a quick break. And up next, it's our book club pick for the month. Don't go away. Thank you.
Hi, this is Don Gagne from NPR. So the night before every long reporting trip, I have this ritual. I like to lay out all of my gear on my kitchen table at home. I call it my pre-trip kitchen table gear check. So there's my laptop, microphones, a mic boom, cables, batteries, two recorders, a huge collection of stuff. Then I take a photograph so I can refer back to it. Sometimes my cat is in the shot. The cat does not come along in the bag, though. It is a visual checklist of everything I need to make great radio. Luckily, your checklist for helping us make great radio is a lot shorter. It's just one item. Give right now.
To support WJCT, please call 904-353-9528. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Lindsay Kilbride, and you might know me as the host of WJCT's podcast, Oddball.
The ball rolled from the center of the table all the way to the edge and stopped.
We don't know what else is inside of it.
Yeah, it could be anything.
Are you insinuating that my father was like some kind of UFO kleptomaniac?
Yep, that podcast. I want to thank everyone who has listened, and I want to make more cool podcasts. So let my bosses know you want that too. Make a contribution at oddballpodcast.com and be sure to subscribe.
This book club segment is underwritten by San Marco Books and More.
Essex Serpent is our book club pick this month. It's a love story, horror story, and more. There's even a mythical monster. Our book club leader, Stacy Goldring, is here now to tell us why. This is the December pick for all your readers out there. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. And you'll be talking about this at your physical book club tomorrow night at our sponsor, San Marco Books and More. But we're so excited to have a preview of that on the air right now. So tell us all about Essex Serpent.
Well, it is Tuesday, right? We're going to actually be there tonight at the bookstore.
Oh, it's tonight.
Pardon me. It's fine. It's a busy time of year. No,
yes.
I can't believe I got it right, frankly. But the Essex Serpent, I've discussed the book now. This will be the fifth time tonight that I'm diving into this book. And what I'm finding is the response is incredibly diverse, which always makes a book group so exciting because it's never the same book twice. But like you said, it is a variety of things, love story, horror story, biblical allegory, etc. But what I'm taking away is the following. This is a book that although it is structured on a pamphlet that was actually published in the late 1600s. So the author structured it off of an old pamphlet using the same chapters, etc. And it's about this serpent that evidently is coming to a village in Essex, and it's making people sick and making people hysterical and killing crops and blah, 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 doing all these horrible things. What does the Essex serpent represent, Melissa? Mm. Well, we know biblically that snakes, serpents are negative, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you think about what is on the, if you look at a medical symbol and you see a staff and a serpent kind of going up, serpents also represent rebirth and rejuvenation and health. So when you have this rumor about something evil coming to your people and destroying it, people take sides. And in this case, the sides are whether you believe in science, because it's during Victorian time, so we have Darwin, or you believe in religion because it's a Victorian society. Whose facts are you going to believe? Are you going to believe our vicar, who happens to be incredibly good looking and happens to be in love with a woman who is a widow and starting her life again, leaving London and coming out to the muddy flats of Essex and searching for something she loves? She loves to look for fossils. She wants to get into the mud and into the dirt. She's leaving society behind. So you have the argument of these star-crossed lovers. What is this serpent that's haunting the village? And it sounded very contemporary to me in a way. You know, who do we believe? What is evil?
What is the truth? What are facts? We're going through that right now with impeachment. The country is so divided that depending on your political persuasion, you believe one set of facts or another.
And you know what? This is nothing new under the sun. This has, anytime you are basing your decisions on a fulcrum called fear, there's never going to be a good outcome. And this book illustrates that using not impeachment, not America, which we are so young and gangly and teenagery in the world, but we are in this small town in not the best part of town. In there's a lot of fog involved. It's very Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It's kind of Mary Shelley, kind of scary. But, animals are going missing. People are dying. People are becoming more and more fearful, and they don't know who to believe. So they are finding that they will only believe in their own little tribe. And what's interesting is our poor little vicar, who always, you always read these books about vicars who are sad because their pews are so empty. So his pews only fill up when people are scared. So he's kind of happy he has a full house on Sunday. But nonetheless, he thinks these people have lost their minds because there's no such thing as an evil serpent. But Sarah Perry, our author, who's incredibly young and incredibly talented, was brought up in a very devout Baptist home. She wasn't exposed to television or movies or anything like that. So her language is very Victorian. But if you like mysteries, if you like Sherlock Holmes, if you like Jane Austen, if you like these, if you are familiar with the Bible and the idea of grace, the idea of redemption, the idea of you're willing to put your past behind you and say, you know what? I think I may be wrong, and be willing to embrace that and see that as strength as opposed to weakness, then this is the book for you.
Now, this just gives you a short preview of how fabulous Stacy's book club groups are, because she will be leading a discussion of Essex Serpent tonight. Her book club meets at San Marco Books and More on the San Marco Square at 6:30 p.m. Doors open to shop, and discussion begins at 7. There are lots of great gift options in there too, by the way, including a Downton Abbey cocktail book, which is on our WJCT gift guide. So get on out tonight to San Marco Books and More and meet Stacy, who is a rock star in the book club world.
Oh, dear.
And has been doing our book club discussions on this show now for
6 years.
Going on six years, which is so wonderful. And email Stacy anytime with book club questions. Just email her at bookclub@wjct.org. And thank you so much for being here. Have a great time tonight and a great holiday.
Thank you, Melissa. You too.
We'll be right back.
I'm Don Gagne from NPR. So the night before every long reporting trip, I like to lay out all my gear on my kitchen table. There's my laptop, microphones, mic, boom. It's a visual checklist of everything I need to make great radio. Luckily, your checklist for helping make great radio is a lot shorter. It's just one thing. Give right now.
To support WJCT, please visit WJCT.org. Thank you.
Hey, what's jazzin'? I'm Damian Lamar. Join me for Taste Tests and broaden your musical palate as we redefine urban radio. Have a taste, Saturdays and Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on WJCT 89.9 FM, Jacksonville.
That sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the holiday season is in full swing, and local nonprofits are working hard to spread goodwill to those in this community who need it most. Daniel is Florida's oldest child-serving agency. Can you believe they just celebrated 135 years of helping kids in this community? They serve an average of 3,500 children and families each day. And at this time of year, it's especially important that you support them. Leslie Wells is president and CEO of Daniel. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
And congratulations on your 135th anniversary. Pretty remarkable.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's been a very exciting year for us celebrating this.
Absolutely. So for those that aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about Daniel and your role in the community.
Sure. As you mentioned, we're the oldest child-serving agency in the state of Florida. We started back in the 1800s as an orphanage here locally, and we've really evolved into a full-service array of services for children and families. We have foster care services, residential treatment. We work heavily in the school system and providing therapeutic overlay services.
Okay. And foster care and adoption programs, they really help kids in crisis all year round.
Sure.
But especially at this time of year when kids might feel lonely and frightened and don't have people they around them at the holidays, it's especially troublesome to think of kids in that situation right now.
Sure. This is an extremely difficult time for children that are placed away from their families. We have over 400 children that we're responsible for on any given day in foster care. And it's this time of year that we want to make them feel as special and as normal as possible, make sure they're surrounded by love and that they can feel just like our own children feel, and make sure that they're getting to visit their siblings if possible or family members, and making sure that's creating a safe and comforting environment for them.
And you do so much for kids. You help kids with mental health and behavioral issues. You are a resource to the entire state for adoption questions and issues. And specifically at the holidays, you, I think, have a special touch with children. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
We try to provide children at this time of year, as I said, making sure they feel safe and loved, that they're in an environment that they can flourish, that we try to ensure that they have everything that they desire, that they have gifts just like our children, that we ensure that they are feeling special and well taken care of. Many of our children in the foster care system or that have been removed from their homes have had, an extremely abusive or traumatic background. And trying to provide that stability at this time of year is extremely important.
And so it's the season of giving. There are lots of ways people can help you. You need items for kids in your independent living program. You need toys. You need grocery store gift cards. You name it. There are lots of ways people can help Daniel, right?
Certainly. We have, if you're interested in sponsoring children, we have lots of children, as you can imagine, that need that special gift that they're looking for this time of year. We have a lot of older adolescents in foster care that benefit from gift cards so they can kind of go out and purchase their own clothing items and things like that. We have a lot of families that we're repairing and putting back together that have recently had their children returned to them, and they're starting from ground zero and need bedding, sheets, household supplies. So our homeless youth, as you mentioned, they need household items. They're getting their start in this life. So everything from toys to household items and food items, where you give out food through Thanksgiving and through the holidays.
The actress and the comedian Tiffany Haddish, I saw her being interviewed recently about how she grew up in a series of foster care situations. And she's obviously very successful now and so funny and fun to watch. But she had a really sad childhood. And she recently started a charity where she gives kids in foster care suitcases. Because as she explained, when she was moved from place to place, she was just told to put all of her items in a trash bag. And she said it made her feel like trash, that she was just like a piece of flotsam or jetsam floating around with no solid roots, no base, not even a suitcase for her things when she had to move. She had to literally just carry her clothes and things out in a trash bag. And so, when I heard that story, that to me was gave a visual representation of how difficult it is for kids in these situations.
It really is. Children are removed from their homes sometimes in the middle of the night and get to take what they can, like you said, in a trash bag, or and it's very few items sometimes that they're taking, and they're going to a brand new environment and a brand new home with nothing, none of their former memories with them. So it's very important.
Yeah. And there are other ways you can help kids that are getting services through Daniel. You can think about adopting or fostering a child, right?
Correct.
How can people learn more about that?
They can go to our website, www.danielkids.org. They can call the Adoption Information Hotline. We've had the Adoption Hotline for the state of Florida for over 25 years. And anything to do with adoption, they can answer questions. If you're interested in adopting out of foster care, private adoption, if you were adopted as a child and you're trying to research and find out your birth parents, anything to do with adoption.
Interesting. Yeah, and that number is 1-800-96-ADOPT, 1-800-96-ADOPT. Now, last year, Daniel facilitated 116 local adoptions.
Yes, and we're for home for the holidays on December 19th. We're on target for about 7 children that will go to their forever homes this December.
And I know that you're probably familiar with this. Judge David Gooding mm-hmm. holds these adoption ceremonies in his courtroom in Jacksonville, and they are really special, aren't they?
They are. It's hard to leave without tears in your eyes. It's a very special time of year.
It really is. So if this is the first time you've ever heard about Daniel, the oldest child welfare agency in the state of Florida, based right here in Jacksonville, if you are thinking of adopting or fostering a child, they are the ones to call. Or if you just want to support their toy drive or support them in any other way, this is a time of year when kids need more support than ever if they are in a tough situation. So check them out online and give them a call. As Leslie said, the website is danielkids.org, danielkids.org. Celebrating 135 years in this city, the oldest nonprofit, I think, in Jacksonville. I don't know of an older one. So kudos to that incredible legacy. And Leslie Wells, who is the president and CEO of Daniel, have a great holiday. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
We're going to take a break, but in a moment, how you can win a piece of art from local artist Mark George. It's a preview of his new exhibit at Space 42 Gallery. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, Peter Bergen, national security analyst for CNN and author of the new book, Trump and His Generals, The Cost of Chaos. We'll talk about how Trump went from bragging about the generals and his administration to later basically going to war with them. Bergen says now that the generals are no longer in the administration, Trump is surrounded by yes men. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Have we been winning the war in Afghanistan? Turns out even the people closest to it don't know. The Washington Post spent 3 years in court obtaining hundreds of documents about the war. What were we told about America's longest armed conflict? And what's the truth? The Afghanistan Papers, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, it's Rachel Martin. NPR is available everywhere. And we mean everywhere.
Ho, ho, ho.
That's Nick. He listens a lot.
Well, I listen to public radio at work and during my long commute.
You might say Nick is listening. Well, all the time. It helps him write this list that he makes every year.
You see, Rachel, most folks, just like the stories you hear, aren't naughty or nice, good or bad. It's complicated.
On this NPR station, we present the facts that help Nick better understand what's going on in our world.
Well, I gotta go. The reindeer are double parked. Dasher's on Dancer. Comet's on Cupid. It's a mess.
We deliver truth and nuance year-round thanks to listeners like you who donate. Here's how to make checking our facts and checking them twice possible.
To support WJCT, please visit WJCT.org. Thank you. Welcome back. Well, did you hear about all the buzz at Art Basel in Miami, the big art celebration? An artist duct taped a banana to a wall, and it sold for $120,000. Then a performance artist removed the banana from the wall, peeled it, and ate it. He was escorted out by security. So as we have a discussion about art and what is art, we want to shine a light now on Riverside Space 42. It's an industrial art gallery and curated event space, and their new exhibition, Pout, is in the works. It opens Saturday, and it features work by local artist Mark George. He joins us now with a preview. Hey, Mark.
Hey.
So tell me about Pout. What will people see?
So a good example of my work, of course, it's all quite consistent. We'll have about 30 different examples of various sizes of my work there.
Your paintings are described as evoking love, anguish, and anxiety. You have a background in commercial art, graphic design, and your paintings have no visible brush strokes. Is that right?
Yeah, I kind of like to lend more of a printed look to this. That's the whole idea here. So kind of, giving this a unique perspective as far as painting that not everybody gets, but that's okay.
And you call it pout because pouting has been ingrained in our society as improper behavior. Is that why you chose to call the exhibition Pout?
Thanks for asking. What we have here is an example of various emotions in our day-to-day life that we view within each other. And the magic behind that is we all do appreciate being welcomed with a smile and friendliness. And those are the beautiful things that help the world go around. But I just wanted to capture all these beautiful emotions that people will have that include, sadness or, anxiety or pouting in this case that you brought up here, which can be just as beautiful as smiling.
Now, you are breaking out as a national artist. You've had local shows at MoCA, The Comer, Alabama Contemporary, and Art Basel in Miami. So it's exciting to have your work exhibited here at Space 42, which is a really unique space next to the Cork Arts District. What were your thoughts about the recent hubbub at Art Basel and the discussion about what constitutes art?
Oh, it's funny. I mean, it's always entertaining to see what's going to be, projected and displayed and what ends up being the big hit. You can never really tell what's going to be successful in music or art or anything. If anyone could possibly guess or, make that educated guess of what would be popular, we would all be much more successful. So you never can tell what is going to be successful, and it's always a pleasure to see what works in contemporary art and what would be that next genre-breaking thing that happens there.
And how do you see the art scene evolving here in Jacksonville?
Well, I guess we'll just see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everything's been really nice. Everybody's been super pleasant to work with over the last 30 years here in Riverside that I've been an artist. I've really enjoyed meeting young people as they come up and become these beautiful artists themselves. And, of course, all the mentors that were there when I was establishing myself long ago and are still here and have become great friends and have, become a beautiful community here. I'm really, really so happy to be a part of Riverside.
Now, this is exciting as well because we want to have everyone prick up your ears. We have a giveaway. The first two people who go to the opening at Space 42 and tell the front desk that they heard about it here on this show will receive a free Mark George wallet. So you need to mark your calendar now for the new exhibition Pout opening this Saturday at 6 p.m. at Space 42 in Riverside. The first two of you who say, I heard this on First Coast Connect, you get a free Mark George wallet. And what will the wallet look like?
Oh, man. Well, we've got a couple of different designs that feature, you know, two different kind of pieces of work that I've put together. So it'll be artwork on a wallet. You may have seen it before.
That sounds cool. you can check out Mark's website at markge.org. And again, check out the new exhibit at Space 42. It kicks off Saturday night. It's called Pout. If you've never been over there, you owe it to yourself to check out this unique industrial gallery space. It's a really exciting space. So have a great exhibit. And thank you so much, Mark George.
Thank you.
For sharing your insights with us. Hope it goes well.
Oh, it's going to be great. I hope everyone can make it.
Well, that's our show. Thanks so much for being with us today. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs the show. Station news director is Jessica Palumbo. And our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. We always value your feedback. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening. And if you're catching our rebroadcast tonight, just stick around for some great music. And we will catch you tomorrow at 9 a.m. in the morning. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.